Okay, good morning everyone. Good morning. So first of all, I should just be clear. Originally I organized to do this talk and I drafted Jeff into it involuntarily and he found out we were doing it yesterday. So what he's going to do is add value from the sidelines and possibly troll.
Troll.
Exactly. In the meantime, I'm going to run through a couple of different things. And what I've really done is try to condense a bunch of experience that we've had from the different work that we've done and from the different groups that we've dealt with. I've largely dealt more so with government than corporate, but I'm going to go through a bunch of things. But as we go, please feel free to ask questions as we proceed through. So, I guess the first thing that I constantly do, and I think is really, really important to do, is to be constantly questioning your business and what you're doing. Why are you running your business? A lot of people have left whatever job they had before to go and start their own business for all kinds of different reasons, but understanding that reason I think is very important. With your goals, you're going to have personal goals and professional goals, and if you're not meeting both of those, then that's a bit of a problem. So, like, what are some of the professional goals that you guys have in running your businesses? Obviously, make money, maybe? Yeah? What are some other professional goals? To do it better than anyone else? To create new stuff? Okay. Any personal goals? Sorry? Learning new things? Okay, cool. Learning new things? Any other sort of things?
Not being constrained.
Not being constrained. Cool. What sort of personal goals?
Technology choices.
And providing those choices to other people.
Creating your own environment rather than someone else's.
Yeah, definitely. Creating. And I think that ends up becoming also a personal goal as well, because you're actually in control of your own work, time, and environment and the rest of it.
Lifestyle freedom.
Lifestyle freedom, definitely. Some of the personal goals might be in how you conduct your business. So this is going to sound totally corny, and I apologize, but one of my personal goals in running our business is to always try to be, it's a big word, but to always try to be noble in the way that we conduct business and the way that we deal with clients, and to always try and aim for doing the right thing by them. So what sort of customers do you want? I have to say, one of the earlier people from the floor was chatting about a customer of his that was trying to bargain down to $20 an hour. And being really, really fiddly about it, you sort of got to think about what sort of customers do you want and how much value are they adding to your personal and professional goals. Because there are going to be customers that it will be best in the long run for you to say no to or to not deal with. There are going to be customers that are absolutely wonderful to deal with and you want to find out how to get more of those kinds of customers. How big, small do you want to be? There's a fantastic camera-based company, web-based company, that they have said that they only want to be 6 people, and they don't want to grow any bigger than that because for them that's a perfect number to have a really good combination of innovation of agility, of being able to move very rapidly, but also being able to provide really quality support. So maybe you only want your business to be 10 people, maybe you want it to be 1,000 people, but having an idea around that is going to help you understand when you've already gone past where it is you're trying to aim. Monetary goals, it sounds odd, but a lot of people say, yeah, I just want to make more money, but how much money do you want to make? How much money do you want your business to make? It's worthwhile, again, knowing, because otherwise you're going to be constantly dissatisfied with where you're at. You might say, okay, I want to make this much money this year, this much money next year, and try to be reasonable about it so that you can understand when you're overachieving. And what can you build on? I think this is a really important one. I've dealt with a lot of particularly smaller open source companies who you say, so what do you do? And ultimately, we can all do anything. And we all say we can do everything. But building on your strengths might mean building on the particular technologies that you have. So if you've built a business around Joomla, then being able to actually market that as one of your strengths is a very good thing, rather than saying, well, we do everything, which people won't remember you for doing everything. They'll remember you for doing the things that you're really, really good at. So focusing on your technical strength, also focusing on the industry strengths. If you've done a lot of car dealerships, then why not say, okay, well, we have special experience in car dealerships. Let's go and target half a dozen car dealerships and actually work with them, because we can say to them, we have 5 car dealerships we already support, and that's a strength, that's a particular quality of customer that we know how to support particularly well. So what can you build on in your particular business? What strengths, what specialities, and again, coming back to what sort of customers you want, making sure that what you choose to take is going to be in line with your personal and professional goals. I think that questioning your business on a regular basis is good, and if you don't remember to do it, if you don't say, I'm going to do it every quarter or every half year or every year, then you just won't do it. You'll find yourself years down the track saying, my God, I'm doing this now and I can't believe I'm doing this. And where did that great opportunity from last year go? I guess I just didn't follow it up. Constantly questioning your business will help you keep yourself focused on what you're good at and where you want to be. Revenue models, there are so many, but fundamentally it's around services. Now, we did a research project that we released last year, the Open Source Industry and Community Census. And what we found is that in terms of development, customization, integration and migration, and support and maintenance, those first three categories of services, I think it was 70, so three quarters of the companies made more than 80% of their revenue from those particular categories of services. But you know, what else can you do? Training, research, some people, some companies decide to do licensing, and that might be licensing of data. You might say, okay, well, we make a GIS application. And I think this is a really interesting point. We work a little bit with companies who are trying to figure out how to open source, how to actually, you know, do open source work. And you can say, well, what are you currently selling? What's your current product? Okay, let's look at that product or service or whatever, and let's figure out, and maybe it's completely proprietary now. So let's say maybe the engine itself could be open source. Because it makes sense for you to have that open source and then to be making money potentially from the data. Or maybe you could open source all of it and make money from services. Where are you currently making money? Where do you want to make money? How many people here make more than 80% of their revenue from open source services and solutions? Actually, let's start again. How many people here have their own small company or are working in a small company that they own? Okay, keep your hands up. How many of you make more than 80% of your revenue from open source? Yeah, most of you are going to be. Everyone else here, how many of you work for another person's company? How many of you don't work? Okay. Actually, how many of you don't work but are paid to work? Yeah, no. But there's going to be looking at what you're offering and understanding where the value is, what people are having paid money for. Some people are going to be happy to pay you money to just do services because you're very good at those services and they're going to pay you rather than someone else because you're better. And I hate to say it, but there are many, many, many ICT companies who are really awful. And so being better actually doesn't take that much effort. But most of the people in this room will be able to do a better job than most of the other ICT companies out there. So show that off. Make sure you demonstrate to your customers the value that they are getting. I had when we first started looking at business consulting and trying to help small open source companies, I remember having a friend's company. It was a one-man company. And I said, look, I wanted to see whether this kind of services would be useful, so let's just sit down and go through your business. And we went through it, and within 6 months, I think we quadrupled his income, but also halved the amount of time he was spending. And it wasn't because he was doing anything particularly badly, it's just that he wasn't looking at what he was doing in a very strategic way. So he was, you know, doing the work for $20 an hour for consulting, and he was doing the dealing with customers that were taking 40% of his time but only paying him 5% of his revenue. And really understanding what people are paying you for and then doing that thing particularly well is going to be very useful. So when it comes to licensing, sometimes with a product you can license the data and you might want to open source the engine. You might want to license the engine and open source the data. There's modules. Some companies provide open source services, solutions, platforms, but they might have particular proprietary modules. That might be an option for your company. Dual licensing is an option, which ends up becoming very convoluted and complicated, particularly if you're trying to integrate open source changes into your dual licensed product, but that is certainly something that some companies have done over the years. And of course, resale. Most people who are doing open source services and solutions are going to be reselling hardware, reselling contractors' time. They might even be reselling proprietary services and solutions as part of what they're doing, but that becomes part of it as well. So some local opportunities. The economic crisis is good for us. As bad as that sounds, it certainly has been, whenever you're in periods of economic crisis, it's going to be good for things like open source because people are going to be looking for cheaper, more efficient options. And we all know that there are many, many options that we can provide. So this is actually definitely the time to be getting out and saying, here are our case studies, here are our opportunities, here is the money that you can save with us. And by the way, that doesn't mean that you should be cheap without selling cheap. If you come in and, I'll come back to messaging in a second, but the economic crisis is a great opportunity, as awful as that sounds, and you should be getting out there and talking to customers and trying to ensure that they are actually getting some good value out of what you're able to provide during this time. There's large shoulders to stand, obviously. There's a huge world of open source tools and that you can build on. If something you want to provide a customer, maybe there's an open source tool that already does 80% of that, so rather than building it from scratch, you can do that. Clients are changing, particularly over the last year or two. It's been absolutely wonderful to see them moving from an ad hoc to a strategic approach. What's happened very much in the past has been the technical people within a company have said, oh, we want to use some open source, so they'll kind of sneak it in often enough. They don't even tell the upper management what they're using. But now upper management is starting to hear about this open source stuff and starting to say, well, how does this work? How can we fit this in? How can we apply open source tools, maybe even methodologies into our business? So there's a shift from an ad hoc approach to open source to a strategic approach. So being there to help them look at open source more strategically is very, very useful. So talk to your existing customers about what else they can do. I've known companies that in the past have found no value by saying they're an open source company, so they just do their services, do their thing, and that's worked absolutely great for them. But now, for some reason, it's coming up and customers are actually wanting it more, and so that can be a selling point for you these days. There's rapid market awareness and growth, which has been really exciting. There are loads of trials of, for instance, links on the desktop that's happened at least in four government departments, major government departments in four states, have been doing trials of links on the desktop in the last year. I mean, this is fantastic. That's something that has always been seen as, you know, the last scary thing that will ever happen. But we're starting to see a lot more interest and a lot more trials happening now than ever before. There is a significant lack of skills, and you've got to be upfront with your clients in saying, look, there are not as many companies right now supporting open source solutions as there are some of the proprietary solutions, but it's a growing market. A smaller company can support a bigger deployment, and you give it to them very straight, and you say, look, but we're here, and because it's open source, another company could come along tomorrow and support it. And if I don't give you the absolute best service that you want, then you will be able to get it from someone else. And then they will think that sounds pretty good, take you on as a challenge, love your service if you do a good job, and save. And exports, a lot of, it's kind of sad, but a lot of Australian companies that make fantastic products and solutions, unfortunately have, it can be hard sometimes to sell that locally. But there are great opportunities with exports. There is fantastic stuff happening in Asia, a lot of demand for open source solutions and services in Asia. There's great stuff happening in New Zealand, although there's a very competitive industry over there that we can certainly be learning from. So there's opportunities to actually look for export markets and what you can do. Export your services, export your products, and there's some really great examples of that already in the industry that you can go and chat to and talk to. What sort of local opportunities are you guys seeing? Anything? Oh, you just want to be entertained, don't you? Okay, moving on. Messaging and marketing. I think this is really important, and even though I wasn't necessarily going to include it to start, you need to have a really positive, really clear message when you're talking to clients that meets your personal and professional goals, and that they will easily understand, that they will be able to walk away and remember who you were, remember what you said. You need to have messaging for your business and your goals, for open source, because even though that may not come up, if it does come up, you need to have a clear and positive line. I've seen companies that are building services and solutions around open source that decide to be sort of smart alecky about the things they're going to say, oh yeah, it's better than that Microsoft crap. And it's not positive, it doesn't reflect well on you, it doesn't reflect well on our industry, and so we need to stay away from those kinds of messages. It's just not helpful. But the other thing is that you can be very, very positive, and you can actually show a different approach to a lot of traditional ICT companies, and that will be refreshing. I've had clients just absolutely love me because I just talk to them about it honestly. They'll say, actually, no, that's not going to suit you, but you know, this might suit you, and actually, we don't really do that, but I know someone that does, and I can help you, you know, find them. Or you know what, I can have a look at your existing environment and see if there's anything else that we might be able to find for you. And you know, just being helpful and trying to be a partner to them rather than just a supplier to them can be really really good in building a relationship that ultimately may give you some really good work and certainly a very good reference. You will have messages around your products as well, and you may have one product, if that's the one product, one service that you sell. But you might be able to message it five different ways and be able to get to five different markets with that one thing that you do really, really well. So have a think about different ways you can message it. You need to make sure you have continuity and professionalism right across your staff. So everyone that's working for your company, everyone that's connected to your company, contractors that come in, should all have a very, very positive and professional message that they're taking forward. The strategic versus reactive. So there's different sort of messaging. You can be reactive in your messaging in terms of just responding to what's happening from your clients, from the market, from the industry, but there's also a lot of strategic messaging that you can do. So for me, I tend to try to get involved in helping run events, maybe doing small industry events or training events or these kinds of things, because not only is it good in providing a need for people that may be clients at some point, but it also is very, very good for delivering good messaging around me, my company, the industry, open source. Compete on value and strengths. Don't be the cheapest, because that doesn't really reflect well on you. People will pay for good quality, and they will pay if they trust you and trust your services and solutions. So you should be really pricing yourself at the market rate. How many people here think that they charge too little for what they do? Yeah. So why? Why are you charging too little?
It's a contract.
Contract, yeah, okay.
Same contract.
Contract?
Because I didn't know how to value it.
You never had a value? Okay. Yep.
Trying to help people that have helped me in the past.
So I'm trying to help people that have helped you in the past. See, I've always had the belief that the sort of term of mates rates, the value that my mate is getting from me is that I'm going to do a really good job. And I'll probably, you know, over-deliver, but sort of saying, okay, well, I'll do it, particularly for people who may end up being long-term customers, you want them to value what you're doing. If you charge them $50 an hour or $20 an hour, they won't value as much if you charge them $100 or $150 now. You know, find what the market rate is, which is where the industry becomes really important. Open Source Industry Australia. How many people here are members of Open Source Industry Australia? Not very many. I mean, you know, everyone here that has a company, or everyone that is involved in an open source company should be, and have that company be a member of Open Source Industry Australia. Get, you know, ask other professionals, what are your rates? You know, what are you doing? What sort of success are you having? What challenges are you having? And we should be approaching our industry in the same way we approach our open source community, and actually use the same sort of lessons and become stronger as an industry for it. But if you charge them too little, they won't value you. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're going to be having 2 and 3 hour lunches or meetings that don't go anywhere, and then you've wasted a day. If you say to them, look, we're going to have a meeting, and it will be $100 a meeting, or whatever your rate is, that you will guarantee you'll have a half hour meeting, it'll be the most productive amount of time you've ever spent with them. So you really want them to value the time that they're spending with you, because it's going to make you better at what you're doing for them and be a better use of their money and your time. And case studies. I think a lot of people now are more aware of open source, particularly in the enterprise and infrastructure. But case studies is a really good way to sort of show that stuff off. So wherever you can, take your clients and see if you can encourage them to do a write-up, do a one-pager, put it on your website and use it as a reference. If you can show people, here's a fantastic company or government agency or whatever that we've done this work for, and of course you have to get their permission, doing this kind of stuff with government takes a lot more time, but it is very worthwhile, then that will reflect really well on you, and that will be very encouraging for new clients to come in. This is a very dry talk, and I apologise, but I've got a lot of information and hopefully it'll be useful. So finding opportunities. Clients are so great. So many people whinge about, oh, you know, it'd be a great job except for the clients, but clients can be a wonderful way to grow your business, grow your opportunities, and grow what it is that you're doing. So, you know, have a good relationship with them. Get them to be your advocates. Get them excited about what you're doing. You know, just even if it doesn't directly apply to them, if it's a good client and they love what you're doing, you know, they're going to be interested in new stuff. And when they're chatting to their mates, you know, over the golf course or wherever, they're going to be saying, oh yeah, I've got this great company that's doing stuff for us. And you will get references from that. Use them as a networking hub. You know, go along to their Christmas parties, invite them to your Christmas parties. You know, work Christmas parties, obviously. Getting all your clients around to your family's house, maybe, I don't know. Use them as references, and use them to help you specialise. You may just find, okay, out of my dozen clients, I've got three of them are all in the same sort of field, so let's get feedback on them and how I can better service their particular field. How can I be a better service for, you know, car retailers, or a better service for, you know, whatever it is that your customers do. And they'll actually be able to give you that feedback, which will help you provide a specific service, which will be the same product, but with special knowledge and domain expertise around it to be able to go and target other people in that same area. And that'll be your best critic. Get them to give you feedback. They're going to feel very empowered by that. And that'll actually, again, help you improve what you're doing to be able to take it to new customers and opportunities. So, you know, clients are not just a way of bringing in money. They are an invaluable asset to you improving your business and improving how your opportunities for business. Any other sort of ideas around how you can sort of use clients, for want of a better word? Nope, back to understanding. Okay. Selling to government? Oh, yes? Yep.
Oh, I was actually getting ready to.
Oh, okay. So selling to government. There are certainly going to be other people in the room that have done a lot more of this than me. I've been involved in doing both selling to government, but also advocacy, like for software and open source advocacy to government. I think I've got a reasonably good idea of how they work now and what they're looking for. And ultimately, government does, and it sounds awful, but from a open market perspective, but it very much is a relationship build. You need to be getting in and talking to people, getting the relationships, go along to government events. And, you know, it might cost you money and time to be able to be going to events, but, you know, talk to people and actually get to know a few agencies. There are some amazing, amazing agencies that are very interested in open source services and solutions, but they're not being given the option. I've had a couple of agencies, big agencies, call me in for a meeting just sort of to say, oh, we're interested in open source, okay, so I go along. And they basically say, look, we want to do this, this, and this, but none of the companies that are coming to us are providing these options. Can you kind of, like, you know, encourage people to do more open source stuff? And it's like, okay, fantastic, I can do that. We really need to be more loud about the benefits to our solutions and to our industry and to the services that we're providing. And going after some of that government work is a really great opportunity. And it might be just your local council, it might be, you know, a state government. There's a lot of good opportunity. Tasmanian state government, actually, there's some really good people that actually ran some Tasmanian open source events a couple of years back, and there's some really knowledgeable people down here. But other states that are doing good stuff. New South Wales government have some very clueful people, and there's already a lot of projects happening. Some great stuff happening in Victoria, which is sort of gone a bit up and down, but there's some really knowledgeable people happening there. Some projects happening in Queensland, in South Australia. Like every state has clever people that know a little bit about open source. So find those people. Find the agencies. What?
I just think it's very gracious of you to suggest that every state has clever people.
But this is actually a really big problem. People assume that people in government must be dumb, dull, boring, restricted, you know, focused on proprietary. Actually, some of the most innovative people I've found
around. That was a Victorian.
Some of the most innovative people I've found have been in government because they have so many interesting little ways, systems they have to work within that if they're really clever, they work around them. So, you will find a lot of really great opportunities in government. So finding those agencies, finding those people is a really great asset. And they will become your champions as well, internally, because they want to do this stuff. They're trying to find out how. So if you can find and create those networks for yourselves, then they will become a champion for you to go in and do great stuff. I'm working within education at the moment, which is an area I didn't really think I'd be getting into if you asked me 5 years ago. But it's fantastic, and I'm working with some agencies that are really, really clever in some of the work that they're doing. And because they want to do more of this open source stuff, they're finding new opportunities for me to do work with them. And that's great, because, you know, they're doing the work. And they're sort of pulling me in to actually do some work. But yeah, you will find advocates and you will find great networks there within government that will help you. So respond to appropriate tenders. There are certainly a lot of tenders that there's no point in responding because it's pretty clear that they have no interest in open source. They're asking for a specific product, but it's no point doing a response. Tenders do take a lot of time, but there are certainly tenders that you should be keeping an eye on. Yep.
Most tender responses are utter crap. If you actually answer the questions, you will be regarded favourably.
That's true.
And answering the questions is really important because you will just get thrown in the bin sitting next to the text desk.
If you do tenders, you have to have a compliant tender. And I've actually got another set of slides. I haven't published it. All right, I'm going to do a blog post today with a set of slides around how to answer a tender. And so I've gone and done some of these courses, and I'm one of those really freaky people that likes writing and likes documentation and likes doing tenders. You have to have a compliant tender. But if you have a compliant tender, you can always also add, you know, some new ideas. By the way, also, we think that here are some other things you can consider. And if you get the right sort of agency and the right sort of, and it's an agency that you already potentially have some knowledge about, you've got to make sure you do your research and answer the questions appropriate to their needs. But you'll be remembered. I actually helped do a tender response for a very, very big email sort of based solution gig. And it ended up becoming, the tender came down to between us and Google, which we're really pleased about. So we beat all the big infrastructures, we beat all the exchange responses, we beat all the big tenderers that came down between us and Google. And this was a small group of, you know, three or four open source companies that were going after a very big multi-million dollar tender. And even though we didn't win that, we got on their radar. And, you know, when they're thinking about open source stuff, they're going to be thinking about us, and that's really, really great. So there certainly are situations where going for a tender is going to be useful. And by the way, if you go for one tender, if you write it appropriately, then there's going to be a lot of that stuff that you can reuse. So having someone, if you try to, as a company, respond to, you know, four or five tenders a year, you'll be able to reuse a lot of that content. And, you know, if you only get one of those, or even if you just get on someone's top few lists, you know, that will lead to some opportunities.
I'll throw something in there.
Yeah.
The funny thing about that tender was that it was of such interest to the group that were deciding tender that there ended up being quite a lot of discussion through the various departments and some departments about how that existed. And so we were hearing from people in projects, you know, five departments across that were saying, oh, you guys went after that big tender. And they know about it. And it was a really odd experience for us because we did what we thought was, you know, completely intelligent open source email infrastructure thing. And they were all very surprised. It was very exciting. Oh, gosh, Linux, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so while I can't necessarily recommend tenders as a marketing exercise, sometimes it can have that effect.
Yeah.
It depends on what you're
going
with. Again, the other side, I can assure you, is very surprising when we get an intelligent tender.
Yeah.
We literally get like 99.8% credit for an entire tender set.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How much work is it actually?
Depends on the job, but actually that depends on the agency. So like doing a DoD one will take you a lot of time. It actually depends on the department, but the best thing to do is to, you can download the tender document for free, usually, and just read through their requirements, and that's the first thing to look at.
But like, how long?
I was getting to that. So the ones that I've responded to, I can usually, so long as I'm working on it probably about half time, I can usually put together a response in 4 to 6 weeks. And that assumes that I have access to and reasonable responses from, and that's probably working maybe 2 days a week on it, maybe 1 day a week even for some of that time.
That's a big project though.
That's a bigger project though, yeah. You'll be able to do it sort of less time than that, but I've gone for some reasonably big tenders. But that's also assuming that, so that's me working both as a one company going for it when I was working for a previous large company, and that's working as a collection of companies going after something as well. Also, keep in mind that I don't remember what the minimum now is. It used to be 80,000, it might have gone up, but there's a minimum amount before they even have to tender. So you might have a $40,000 project, right, which, you know, is good money for all of us. And you might be able to say to a local council or a government department or whatever, look, here's this fantastic solution, it's $40,000, here's what it's going to give you over 3 years, whatever. And they don't need to tender to take that solution on.
Yeah, I think it's 150 in Victoria.
Yeah, it's different from Tasmania.
Yep.
I think they put it up.
Yeah. And I've been told by lots of clients, please charge us
X99999. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's great opportunities there. You can go up and work without having to go through this painful.
Also, your solution has been really good. I've seen it broken into stages each of the time.
I've seen that as well, but of course we wouldn't, you know, they would never admit to that. So they're totally separate projects.
I didn't say that.
Yeah. But there's great opportunities, and those opportunities you will largely get through relationship building. Going in, talking to the people, showing what you can do, pitching it the right way, doing your research on that particular agency, their particular needs, and solving their needs in a way, with the right language. Even though the ITIL, who here has heard about ITIL? Oh, good. That's you. Even though that framework is like really, really, even though that framework is really, really painful and seems completely a waste of time, reading through ITIL documentation and certification is very useful because it'll give you the right language. And they need to hear the right language to be able to trust you to get to the next stage. Because you've got to go through a bunch of gatekeepers that don't care about your solution, don't care about how good it is for business, don't care about how brilliant you are. They just want to hear that you can meet their requirements before you get to that stage.
An incident response.
It's just buzzwords.
But they're buzzwords you need to know.
Yeah.
So reading that stuff is actually very important. I didn't mean this to turn into a tender or anything, so anyway, sorry.
Can I just ask you a quick question? Yeah. When you're talking about tenders, do you think, I mean, this might be slightly off topic, whatever, but do you think it's better to go as, because this is something that I've been thinking about, talking about before, the smaller companies, I know, to either whether we create an umbrella company to take in all those smaller companies and represent all those smaller things, or take it as all separate?
Yeah, I've thought about the same thing a lot. The question is whether you create an umbrella company to go after these big things or something else. I personally believe that the moment you create that structure, you start to limit yourself.
Yeah.
But if you like see a tender, like I mean, if you're a company that wants to go after tenders, and so you want to pull in different companies to do that, rather than creating all this structure, and then once you have a structure, then you have, you know, five companies, and they may complement, they may not complement each other, but they're not all going to be pulled in for every tender.
Also for like, so, I mean, the reason I'm thinking of two is more so from a development aspect, where you've got, you know, 10, 12, whatever, like, amazing developers that are generally doing it all sole trader based.
I think the best thing to do is self-organise. So you find tenders and you pull in the right companies. Like, if you've got the motivation, I used to be really, really, really keen to do this, but then I got stuck doing educational stuff. I love doing what I'm doing, but I'm doing a bunch of education stuff now. But I'd love to get back into doing that kind of stuff. And you just pull in the right companies for that particular tender. And I mean, just keep the organisation overhead down as much as possible. And that way you'll keep flexible and adaptable, and you're not going to annoy anyone because there's not expectations that you're not going to be able to necessarily meet. Because if you create that structure, and then one of the companies never gets pulled in a tender because fundamentally they do, you know, fire escapes, and you really shouldn't pull them in to start. Then, you know, they're going to get really annoying. Whereas just be dynamic about it, just pull in a bunch of companies that you think will be appropriate, that'll work a lot better.
If you were going for a tender and you had 12 rather than kind of like...
The other part of that answer is creating an umbrella company, they see straight through it because they'll be like, oh, it's a two-month company.
Mm.
But the best thing to do, tenders don't need an umbrella company. Tenders need a lead contractor, right, which would be the company that is taking the legal responsibility, the fiscal responsibility, and the delivery responsibility, and they're the ones signing saying, yes, this will happen. And then you have all the subcontractors.
Yeah, okay.
And so all you have to do is have one company which has a reasonably good name, reasonably good fiscal responsibility, reasonably good track record, and then the rest of them can be anyone. The best thing to do then, because you usually have to define who your subcontractors are, so define multiples that you trust, but you know, try to have backup plans. I'm going to run out of time, so I'm going to move on from tendering. Make sure you include training documentation options. Government now, and because they got so burnt by outsourcing a while ago, they want to be able to transfer knowledge internally, and that's really, really important to them. So make sure that you provide the options for training, for skilling up, and for them to maintain the strategic direction and control over what they're doing. Being very aware of that's very, very important. Anticipate risk mitigation and concerns, and that doesn't only mean, yes, this product will work or this solution will work, and we can prove it this way, and if it doesn't work, we'll give you your money back. That also includes things like, yes, our company will still be around, and if it's not, here is a risk mitigation process for that. Yes, this will provide the particular requirement that you're wanting to fulfill, and if it doesn't, then here's the fallback plan. And try to anticipate all areas of risk and give them mitigation plans for those so that you can show that you've anticipated those. And provide outstanding service. This sounds so simple. I am in the process of doing a potential speech to text solution for schools, right? And so we've put together, you know, just a basic demo and all just open source tools. It's kind of crap, to be honest, in terms of, you know, from a technical person's perspective, it's like, oh, you know, it doesn't get all the words exactly right, doesn't do this. So from our perspective, we didn't think it was a particularly good demo. We showed it to the people we were working with and they were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And the reason they're so impressed is because they've just been used to such mediocrity. And it's sad, but a lot of government departments are getting really mediocre services and solutions from other ICT vendors, even from the really, really big guys. Part of the reason I created my own business was because I was sick of working for a large company that I didn't think was doing a particularly good job. So, be outstanding in your services and solutions, and you will create a really good reputation for yourself. You will get excellent relationships and references from the government departments you're working with, and you will far outstrip any competition they have. You have. So, yes?
A large chunk of that is be realistic about your time frames.
Right, okay.
And deliver what you say you're going to deliver.
Yeah, and always build in extra time and always build in extra risk money. Because you can say to them, look, we've put an extra $10,000 of just risk mitigation money and an extra 2 weeks of time. If we don't use it, you get it early and you get in, we don't have to spend that money, but, you know, rock and roll. And if you do spend that money, that's fine. It's normal, you know, practice to sort of dip into your risk mitigation funds if you need to. But yeah, certainly make sure you're very realistic and give yourself plenty of time. Delivering early is so good, delivering late is unacceptable.
If you do dip into that risk mitigation, it's much better that you say, this event happened that caused us to run over our time frame, which is why we had to dip into that money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really just about being honest with your customers. And it sounds so simple, but so many people aren't. So yeah, anyway. Biggest challenges, there are certainly still challenges. My personal perspective is that our biggest challenge right now is apathy. Apathy from our industry and getting the word out, getting people knowing about what we do, but also apathy from the market in terms of, we've been using this for years, why would we change? But that's changing a lot as well, so different people come across different challenges, and I think I'm running out of time, so...
No, I've got
20 minutes. Yeah, but I've got a lot more slides. Okay, so... I'll address a little bit. So what are the biggest challenges you guys are facing? Oh, come on. Okay, so who isn't facing any challenges right now whatsoever? No, you can't talk.
It's not a challenge so much on the other side, buying services.
Sure.
And I think the bit about risk, and if you're a small organisation or a small one-person company, you need to develop a network of people who actually provide the same services and don't, they're like co-opetition sort of thing. Use them as a backup for yourself so you can sell me, and by the way, if I'm not here or I'm too busy at the time, here's these other organisations you can go to, because that makes you feel a lot better when you're buying those services.
Absolutely, and the thing is also that it shows how confident you are in what you're providing. Because if you say that to a customer, there's me, but there's also all these other companies that can provide this that I trust and that I believe that you can use, then they're going to think, well, this person is so confident in what they're doing, they think that we're just going to run off to someone else if they're cheaper. Then you just provide outstanding service, and then you're going to keep that client, they're going to be comfortable, and you're going to be able to... Because if you don't get past that first stage of meeting those expectations, of risk mitigation, of meeting the requirements, of making sure that you're not going to fold in 2 days, then it's only after you meet those first expectations you can get to the next point of actually delivering these services or actually doing your work. Yep.
Also, realistically valuing your time, and to go back to that point, it's much, much harder to go in low and then raise your prices to what you need to live.
Which is why you have to go with market rates.
You cannot go in cheap.
Going in, and I mean, we've all done it at some point, and I did it about a year ago, most recently. But you go in cheap, and the problem isn't so much, I mean, there's certainly a problem that you won't be able to raise your prices as well, but the problem also is the way that they differently value you. Because, they're always going to have other people that are delivering services and solutions to them. And if those other people are twice your price, even though they might be delivering half your value, they're kind of, there are certainly going to be more people in that company that are going to value them twice as much. So you don't want to be that, cheap open source thing that's going to be superseded the moment another flashy PowerPoint presentation comes along. And I did use that term on purpose. You want to be the highly valued solution that they're paying good money for because they know it's really, really good.
It's a perceptive thing as well. We're paying you this much money, you must be good.
Yeah. And even though I'm not dressed this way right now, one of the most valuable pieces of advice I had in dealing with government is dress $1 million. If you were going in wearing a really, really chic suit, and it might have cost you a month's salary, you will be seen to be better at what you do, which is ridiculous. It's the same as using pretty graphs when we all know that data can do the same thing. But they need to see that to be able to get to that next point in many cases. Dress really, really well.
Related to the earlier point about being able to have other people to hand work to and stuff, a lot of our open source clients come to us and say, one of our challenges is that
we're the only people doing what we do, or we're the only people who know that we're doing what we do. And because we can't point to other people in the industry, people are like, oh, we don't want to use your product because there's nobody else out there. So every now and then, we're sort of tasked with finding someone's competition to see if there's someone else in the open source industry that does what they do, so that they can sort of build a relationship with them.
Yeah. So the magical word for that inside government is industry standard.
Yeah.
You want to agree on that, then you can say you're an industry standard. And then you deploy it.
Again, ISIL coming into play. The other thing is that some people think that creating a relationship with companies that don't compete with you is better than creating a relationship with companies that do compete. Ultimately, you need to create a relationship with companies that compete with you because you're going to be able to give each other work, you're going to have slightly different focuses inevitably anyway, but you'll be able to go after those bigger tenders. Ultimately, it's a really, really, really big pie out there. We're only nibbling at the crusts at the moment, so the more we can work together and get to the big chunk of the pie, the better off we're all going to be. Go ahead.
Please, take pie away from me.
Sorry?
Take pie away from ACA.
Do not take my pie away!
Take CA's pie.
I like pie. Okay, moving on. Procurement requirements as well. Obviously, when dealing with government, certainly with some of the very large corporates, they're going to have particular requirements. Be knowledgeable about those requirements, make sure you meet those requirements before you even walk through the door. And if you don't meet their requirements, that's also okay, so long as you know you don't and you, again, mitigate that risk. No, we don't have $10 million personal liability, public liability, professional indemnity, whatever, right now, but if we get this contract, we'll have it before we sign any paperwork, or before we sign any contracts, or within a week, or whatever. You know, so long as you know what you meet and don't meet, and have a plan for what you don't meet, then it can be okay. Ultimately, meeting in the first place is good, but it may not be viable for you to get professional indemnity for $10 million or $20 million right now because you don't need it for your other clients. But, you know, having a plan in place will work. Okay, so, industry and community. I've briefly mentioned this before, but getting involved in the open source industry community, for want of a better word, so Aussia, having meetups of other people in the industry will be really beneficial to you because you're going to grow the skills and resources, you're going to get those opportunities because that company may be doing, I've seen this a lot myself, we've had a client that wants a particular service that we've provided at the time because it was handy and beneficial and we needed the work at the time, but as time went on, it's not really what we wanted to be doing, so we pass it off to a company we know. We're going to pass it off to a company we know, which means it's going to be another one that's participating in the community that, you know, that we've heard of, that we trust. So finding people to trust is good, and getting people to trust you is good. Partnering for bigger opportunities, as I've mentioned a couple of times. And as an industry, taking those positive messages to the market. There is a company that frustrates me no end, which will remain unnamed, and they're not Australian, their mechanism of selling their open source services and solutions is, open source, so much risk, come to us and we'll mitigate the risk. That's really bad for all of us, so try and stay with the positive messages. You know, a better message for that specific company would be along the lines of, we can help you identify and deal with this or that or the specific product that we're looking at. But don't try and use scare tactics. They don't really work in the Australian market anyway. Well, actually sometimes they do, but they tend to work in not buying something rather than buying something. Except when it comes to security. But anyway. Tips and tricks. So just some tips and tricks from my experience and our experience. I'm sure Jeff will chip in with extra stuff in a minute. But really invest yourself. If you're really thinking about, from my personal perspective, having half a dozen really good clients is better than having 30 not so good clients. It depends on the size of your business as to where that ranks, but from my two-person business perspective, that's how I feel. So really invest yourself in the clients that you have. Really understand what they want, keep in contact with them, try and anticipate their needs. I've noticed that you guys are going to be opening 50 new franchises. Have you thought about this? I've noticed that you guys are having a problem with the management and with uptime or whatever it is. Try and really anticipate the needs. And they're really going to appreciate that. And you can become a partner in solving their technology needs rather than just the supplier of this tiny little element of their entire strategy. Ultimately, if you can gain their trust, and this may or may not be what you want to do, but if you can gain their trust and become part of their planning process for their ICT, that's going to be good for you, but it's also going to be good for them, hopefully, if you've got good services and solutions, because that will provide the opportunity to find new things to solve within their businesses, which will make their business work better, make their ICT more efficient, all these kind of things. And you can only get that if you really invest yourself. Make your solutions easy to buy. This is so important. If it's something that they have to click here, select 20 options, have a 20% here, and then 5% here, and then 30% here, and then they have to choose this additional option, you know, it just becomes ridiculous. Make it as easy to buy as you possibly can. And there are certainly going to be a lot of solutions that aren't going to be able to be made that way, but even those, you can say, here's a package that will come in and will solve this issue. If you have something that requires a huge amount of consulting to even be able to understand how much it's going to cost them, like maybe BI, then you like business intelligence, you might say, okay, well, here's a package where we come in for 2 days and we analyze your business, and then we give you a demo and a quote or something like that. You try to package it as much as possible. Sorry?
And a report.
Yep, reports are fantastic. Particularly if they're pretty, have lots of graphs, and they're easy to understand.
You often pay $7,000 for someone to write a report.
It's pretty crazy. People will actually pay, I mean, they pay, you know, Gartner will do a report, will sell it for $5,000 a pop, or $10,000 a pop, and they're selling it en masse to anyone who can afford it. So if you can go and give them a specialized, individualized report of their particular environment, you know, that's going to be worth money to them. But again, you've got to weigh up the customer. Some customers will not be happy to pay that unless maybe there's different things that they require. Be adaptable, that's a really important one. We're doing business now that we didn't think we'd be doing when we first started, but again, if you keep questioning and going back and looking at what your personal and professional goals are, you're going to be able to stay roughly on track of what you were originally trying to achieve, but you're also being adaptable to the different opportunities that come up. So when a door opens, you actually see it, because if it opens and you don't see it, then there's an opportunity lost. Repeatability, efficiency of effort, you don't want to be reinventing the wheel every single time. And certainly there are some products for which that is necessary, but even within those products, try and find the parts of the process that you can make repeatable, that you can document and make easy to implement, because that's going to cut down your cost of implementation and your cost of sale. Push and open doors. Don't try and convince someone who's obviously an absolute fanatic about a particular product that your product is better, when there are going to be other people that aren't so sure or don't know anything about the product. And find activities that complement your goals. So if you are specializing in security, you know, find all the security conferences, find all the security events, get involved in the security community. If your product is based on web, you know, get involved in that community. If it's Linux, get involved in that community. And go along to activities. So there might be conferences. You might run activities. You might say, okay, I'm going to run a BI for government free information day, running for breakfast from 8 a.m., running for an hour and a half, for these people, and then you've got the rest of the day open to have meetings with any of those people for whom you may actually have business opportunities. So actually run events. I mean, I'm a natural event coordinator, so this is probably a little bit more natural for me than some other people, but you know, it's really, really easy. When Jeff and I launched the census, we decided very early in that process that we wanted to go to every capital in Australia to promote census. And yeah, that was a big goal, but we thought, let's see how much effort it takes. And it was a lot cheaper than we thought. It was actually not ridiculously expensive to fly to every capital city and run a 1 or 2 hour event in every capital city over a period of, we did it over 3 weeks, you'd probably do it in a lot less time. So actually have a look at things like that. Think big and then see what it'll cost you. You'll probably find that some of the things that seem unattainable are actually a lot more attainable than you think.
It killed us, but it didn't bankrupt us.
Yeah, that's the important thing. But I mean, we got some great contacts from that, and it was also a lot of fun, and it also helped. I mean, I had someone just the other day come up to me and say, thank you so much for the one that we ran in Hobart, because you know that really reinvigorated the community there to sort of get involved in doing stuff. And I mean, it was quite bizarre. It was really hard. It's always hard to get Sydney people along to things because they're all snobs. But I'm not from Sydney, by the way. But you know, Darwin, we were booked out weeks in advance, and we had people come along that had to stand, and it was fantastic. So, you know, a lot of the smaller cities, even though they may seem a smaller market, they can be a lot easier to engage. Getting in to see the CIO of the Northern Territory government was a hell of a lot easier than getting in to see even some of the sort of lower management in New South Wales government, because they're a lot more sort of open with that. So, actually try different areas, different markets.
Regional Australia.
Regional Australia.
That's where I've had most of my successes with Regional Australia, because there's not the people out there that have the solutions.
Yep.
And they need solutions out there. So if you can get out there, especially with a product like open source stuff,
yep.
You can get out there, you can give it to them, and not only that, generally you'll start to find one or two or three other people in the area that can then go on to support it when you leave that area or stuff.
Yeah.
And they get underlooked. Regional Australia gets completely underlooked. So if you go in there and you're offering them something, and they're like, yes, somebody's interested.
And they're competitive too. I found some really amazing companies springing out of regional Western Australia. Western Australia seems to be reasonably competitive with pretty much the rest of Australia for all kinds of good reasons but there's some amazing stuff coming out of there that you wouldn't find unless you went over there and actually chatted to people and found out about it, and now you've got this fantastic network that you can also work with. There's some great stuff happening, so definitely look outside of the communities that you're already involved in. Now, just last and not least, I think that's it, yeah, that's the last of my points. Any last sort of questions or ideas? I guess I really want this to be more of a discussion-oriented, so maybe let's spend the next 5 minutes, so just talking through different opportunities and ideas that you guys have.
I'm going to second that, I'm doing a lot of work with local government and regional New South Wales and great couple of clients out there, and they really are looking for the solutions. They don't know what there is out there. And they think because they're a regional council, they don't have the budget for it, they can't get solutions that the metro councils can.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an opportunity for, like what I'm doing with planning and getting out there and setting up basic instruments for them. And, somebody can go in there with another solution, somebody can go with a basket, somebody can go in with a they're looking for the solution.
Mm. And you have to get with other companies.
And I found the same with regional governments in Victoria. They're literally falling over themselves. And if they find someone who will actually give them... So it's because the problem they've got is, who's going to deal with them?
Yeah.
They literally cannot get reliable people.
They engage in tier one and they get grants.
Yeah.
The people who work in Sydney, the state governments in Sydney or the metro councils, because that's where the perceived money is. And they don't want to get out and go to Sydney area.
Mm-hmm.
They neglect, there's this whole chunk of New South Wales.
Well,
as
the country.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I've just moved to the country
every once in
a while. But yeah. I think my local town probably doesn't have a lot of money, but yeah.
They're looking for, with open source, you can provide them the solutions that they need for not having to spend multi millions of dollars.
But this comes back to
their infrastructure as well, because that's the other thing. Sorry, when I'm sitting there with these people talking about delivering solutions for regional Australia in Sydney, and it's like, you guys have to realise that capital cities have broadband, and that's probably about it.
Yeah.
And we have a quite large country, and our infrastructure is shit. And most of the guys out there, most of my clients in regional Australia are 56k.
And I mean, they have a lot of money still.
The other thing is,
don't forget, all of these people get together.
Yes.
All of the regional councils in Victoria, for example, get together monthly to talk about their IT solutions. Because they're that different. Everyone in most of these towns have their sort of, they all go to Chamber of Commerce, and they all talk about who they're using. And I've had unsolicited phone calls. But sometimes, I heard about you from Shepparton.
Yeah.
Or I heard about you from freaking Gippsland, who heard about you from Shepparton.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that, like, this. We should. How much longer
do I have? No. Not to say shut up early, but.
Yeah, you should definitely buff this.
Yeah.
I'm doing an LBC buff, so. but I think actually moving this conversation onto the Aussie mailing list would be a better place for it, because that way there's going to be more people around the country who can participate.
Yeah, I've just put up the URL for Aussie.
Oh, good. Okay, cool. So go there, join the mailing list. Let's actually start a conversation, probably after we've all collapsed at the end of this week.
You don't have to be a member to join the Aussie chat list either. So.
Yeah. Cool.
Membership's only like $50 for a company anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that if you're just putting your toe in the water, you don't have to be a member to join.
Yep.
Because the other thing is, just going back to that, it comes back to both the efficient, repeatable products and services, but also making it easy to buy. You can say, okay, well, we can go in and say, this solution is however much, and we know it's going to take this for 99% of the customers we're dealing with. We know that every council is going to have very, very similar basic requirements, so we can just sell this to every council in the state or the country or whatever. As many as you can reach. but it'll be very repeatable business. And you can say, okay, well, I can have 50 websites all running the same basic infrastructure that I'm only having to do upgrades to once and propagate it out. And now I've become a specialist in one platform that's providing all this need. And again, making it easy to sell, easy to buy, you know, find another couple of companies. If VoIP is something, you know, if you talk to a couple of the councils or the, whichever the market is, and this is what we're talking about before with customers, talk to them about what they need. Come up with a package, and if you don't have all parts of that package, you know, partner with two or three other companies to put together the package and just go and take it. If you're working with a couple of other companies, you've also got access to their skills of marketing, to their, you're going to be able to share the load, being able to get the word out there, and hopefully be able to get more success out of it for all of you. And you're going to get into industries that you wouldn't necessarily been into before. I don't think that was a question, I think that was a stretch. Okay. Yep.
How important is face-to-face time with clients?
How important is face-to-face time with clients? It really depends on the client. Government, it's really, really important, and it's really annoying. Because you have to spend so much more time than you ever expect. So all of us are very, well, most of us are very used to a digital world, very used to being able to say, here's what I'm doing, here's the plan, rock and roll. And you may never meet someone until the actual day. And even then, they may do something else, but you can still implement and do that thing. But face-to-face time is very much part of that relationship building, relationship building within government very much requires face-to-face time. So if you want the work, you have to get the relationship, you have to have face-to-face time. Having said that, once you build the reputation, face-to-face time becomes less important. So, you know, as you're saying, you're getting recommendations from people who have met you, who have heard about your work from other places, and you can get that work that way. But building up that reputation requires a lot of face-to-face time. For different industries, you'll find different requirements. You might find...
There's a particular culture in government that requires it for doing services to other IT companies and stuff like that.
Definitely. Even within large corporates, you'll find that depending on who you're dealing with, if you're dealing with the IT department, probably less important. If you're dealing with the sales department, probably more important. I don't know. It depends on the industry. Oh.
Okay, who'd like to take this to a BOF? Who would be interested in having a BOF session about this?
What's a BOF?
Good question. Birds of a feather session, it's basically one of these sort of talk sessions, very informal, very quick, usually about 15, 20 minutes. Can be longer.
It's more of a forum for getting together and just talking about stuff in a people forum, whereas this is, you know, me ranting.
There's a list of BOF sessions up at reception, and I think if you want to put down...
Regional open source.
Regional open source, yep.
That's
good.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
So keep an eye on that. There is a list up at reception at some point.
And also jump on the Aussie mailing list and let's have some conversations happening there.
Cool.
Okay. I'm certainly
interested.
Thank you. Thank you.